Can we shift to China? I would like to get your input about the U.S.-China relations. I'm sure you were aware of the recent summit that took place in the APEC summit in San Francisco and the meeting between Biden and President Xi. Of course, our president, incompetent, calling the Chinese president a dictator. I didn't even know under what context will even something like that will be even said. So, but that's beside the point. Where do you see, first of all, where do you see the U.S.-China relations going?
Well, I think it's going nowhere. Biden, you know, this is all for window dressing.
Yeah.
Biden gave his sort of, you know, the remarks that were written for him. He, you know, read them in a very perfunctory, robotic manner.
Mm-hmm.
China responded, smiling. They're always smiling.
Of course.
But they're basically saying, you know, that they're not backing away from what has been their policy and, frankly, the U.S. policy for the last 52 years, that Taiwan is part of China.
China.
So it's not a separate country. The problem is the United States then is going ahead to sell, you know, $600 million worth of weapons to Taiwan, which is going to anger the Chinese. Both the United States and Australia, New Zealand, the ANZUS countries, they continue to conduct military exercises off the coast of China, which China is pushing back on. Just the other day that there was some damage done to some Australian divers by the sonar waves sent out by the Chinese. Divers claimed they were in international water. The Chinese said, no, you're in our waters. So that keeps going on. The problem is it's really in the halls of Congress and in the political elite in Washington. We keep talking about China as an enemy. How many times you sit there and call somebody an enemy and then you don't expect that country to react?
Right.
Say, oh, you're calling me an enemy? Okay. You know, we'll be your enemy. I see China recognizing that they don't see the United States becoming a willing cooperative partner, at least economically, going forward.
Mm-hmm. And let alone on a diplomatic side, we are saying we do recognize one China policy, one China, two systems, but we're doing the opposite. Because I didn't understand the purpose of the previous speaker, Nancy Pelosi, going to Taiwan. What for?
You're right. It's just we keep sending contradictory messages.
Mm-hmm.
And I about 20 years ago, mm-hmm. I was involved with the Anti-Terrorism Assistance Training Program. Had a senior crisis management seminar put on once a month. Mm-hmm. We would bring the senior officials, government officials, police officials, no DOD, no military personnel, but everybody else from upper levels of governments. And that one government would come to DC, and I'd do the lecture on terrorism and on human rights. And I dealt with people from over 60 countries. So, you know, throughout Asia, throughout Latin America, throughout Africa, throughout the Mediterranean, Cyprus, Greece, Egypt, mm-hmm. Saudi Arabia. And what I discovered was all of these foreign countries, these people, they had a common theme, because this is right in the aftermath of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. And they come up and say, okay, what's the real plan? What's the real objective here of the United States? What's the secret? Because they believed that no matter what we were saying in public, mm-hmm. or doing in public, that we actually had some hidden secret agenda that we weren't filling them in on. And because they couldn't believe that we were, like with Iraq, we were being that crazy of eliminating Saddam and then creating a Shia state at the very time we were saying that we were worried about the Shias in Iran. And I had to tell them, I said, guys, we're really that stupid. You know, the United States is not playing 3D chess here. You know, we can barely put the pieces on a checkerboard anymore. So, that's, you know, part of what's going on with China is in the back of their mind, they wonder, is the United States got some clever plot that it's working out, and they're trying to figure it out instead of recognizing, no, we're just, you know, we're very short-sighted. We're only looking at, you know, what's directly in front of our face. And the flavor of the month now is China is an enemy, and that's how we're going to treat her, because that's our politics. Find me one politician in the United States that could come out now and say, wait a second, folks, China's not our enemy. It may be an economic adversary, a competitor, but it's not our enemy. They would immediately be accused of being agents of the Chinese. So there's, and the same thing would be said for anyone trying to advocate for a normal relationship with Russia as well. So our politics right now are dictating what we can do, limiting what we can do.
Yeah, let alone, Larry, in Washington, there are no more individual or officials that have some sort of depth when it comes down to international relations and so forth. I call them amateurs. There's no other way of describing it. So, because it's got, at least, you know, we might disagree, for example, that during the time when Henry Kissinger was there, yes, of course, he had some dark history when it comes down to Cambodia and so forth. But at least he was somebody who had an understanding of how to read the geopolitical landscape. You know, we might disagree with how. Now we don't even have those kind of individuals. We are running out of expertise in Washington that can at least provide the argument. And this is when you have someone who speaks the truth, like yourself. You kind of like, no, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Yeah. Nobody is willing to hear the truth anymore. And it's sad. It's very, very sad. Yeah. So I want to ask one fundamental question, Larry, because a lot of our viewers in the channel here always ask about this. Are we looking at a hot war between the U.S. and China? In your professional assessment, as one who worked in Washington, you've been around long enough to know the dynamics. Are we looking at a hot war?
Yes. I mean, the commander of Indo-PACOM has been quite clear. He said earlier this year or late last year that we're going to be at war with China by 2025. So, you know, when you look at some of the actions that we're taking militarily in the China Sea, they're designed deliberately to provoke China, to provoke a reaction, because the U.S. assumption is that we can defeat China. The Chinese, I think, have recognized that is what the United States plan is and is trying to avoid it. But that was also one of the reasons I think they became closer with Russia. Russia has access to some military equipment and technology that China does not. And so by aligning with Russia, China is going to be in a stronger position. But no, I think, look, we are extremely dangerous period in history. That is not just the possibility of the outbreak of war in China, that we could accidentally stumble into it in Ukraine, and then what's taking place with Israel. If Israel decides to step up attacks and invade southern Lebanon, then I think all bets are off. Then I think we're going to be looking at seeing that regional conflict explode. And then that can then escalate quickly into a hot war that draws in a lot of other countries.
Let alone whether we can afford it or not. I mean,
yes, right.
I don't think so. I mean, I was in Afghanistan. I went over there and I argued my first year when I got there in 2002. I argued that they ain't going to be a winning streak here, because we're dealing with a different civilization, different culture, different. And if you look at history, you will think that we learned something from it. Oh, no, we can take care of it. I said, no, you won't. And this is where they had to pull out General McChrystal at that time, because he spoke the truth and they didn't like it. So when I try to assess these dimensions with China, considering that I had a chance to look at, Larry, scenarios from the Pentagon way back, they run about 18 scenarios. Out of the 18 scenarios, 17 of them, we lost the war against China.
Mm-hmm.
It was only one that, well, when you consider 17 out of, you know, 18, all the bets are off. There is no way we can win the war. So, and the reason I'm bringing this up, Larry, the reason why I wanted to know your inputs on into this is because I'm noticing a trend as far as NATO's presence or the incremental presence of NATO in Asia. I'm sure you heard about NATO's opening an office in Japan. And it begs the question, what would be the purpose of NATO being in Asia?
Yeah. Well, NATO's, it's a hammer looking for a nail, and it's not a big hammer.
Exactly.
It's a tiny hammer.
Yeah.
So it makes no sense. This the United States is trying to transform NATO into something it is not, cannot, and should not be. It is not a global security compact.
Mm.
It was a regional compact initially set up to resist the Soviet Union, to create a military counter to the Soviet Union. Well, the Soviets disappeared. As soon as the Soviet Union broke up, NATO should have been disbanded. But it's a bureaucracy. It's a jobs program for white guys, now some women. And so got to have all those senior command billets so that you can keep the defense budget growing.
Yeah.
So it's just NATO is being humiliated right now in Ukraine. And all the Ukrainians were, in fact, the proxy NATO force to fight Russia.
Yeah.
And Russia is beating them and beating them decisively.
Yeah.
And once that beating is over, I think there's going to be a real reevaluation of NATO and its role. I would not be surprised to see NATO cease to exist within 2 or 3 years.
And it's really about time. About time. We're going to detail more about this in our last segment because we're going to be talking about Ukraine. Just for our viewers, with me here is Larry Johnson. For those who do not know who Larry is, here he is right here. For you who've been asking to bring Larry Johnson. So here he is. So one final question on the China file, Larry. Do you think or would you expect within the next 5 years that Taiwan will be peacefully reunified with mainland China?
Yes. Yeah, no, I do. Yeah. I think that's how the Chinese will accomplish it. They're not going to send an invasion force across the strait fight and see how many Chinese they can kill. I think they recognize they can win it at the ballot box and will try to do so. I think just the visit of sort of those who have descended from Chiang Kai-shek, that, you know, when they go back, they went back to mainland China for a meeting. Well, that was unheard of. That's sort of like seeing the Iranians and the Saudis get back together. So I think a lot hinges on the upcoming election in Taiwan. But if the people that favor reunification with China win, they're on the way to a peaceful reunification, which is just going to drive the United States crazy. Because once again, our strategic plan to divide and conquer is going up in smoke.
Yeah, that's usually the spell for the end is here.